Hi, and welcome back to Activists of Tech, the Responsible Tech Podcast. Reading about Tezcreel feels like reading a bad sci-fi storyline written by a man with a god complex. Unfortunately, it's real, and if you haven't heard of it, it's basically a movement that allows its proponents to use the threat of human extinction to justify expensive or harmful projects and demand billions of dollars to save us from these quote-unquote existential threats. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? These are very real aspirations, and some of the tech billionaires setting the rules of the tech industry even call themselves the creators. It's worse than the Godfathers, if you ask me, though it's fairly close. We've seen it, for example, with OpenAI asking for billions to save us from the very AI systems they are still trying to build, somehow, and more generally, AI gurus working on how to save us from killer robots or AI systems becoming conscious instead of addressing hunger, homelessness, inequalities, or environmental issues in their country. Even just in their city would have more of an impact than stealing money under the excuse of saving people who don't exist yet from evil AI systems that also don't exist yet. But it's not about helping, or AI for humanity, as they like to call it. It's about power, influence, and money. And the pipeline from these delusions to the far-right ideology and techno-fascism is pretty straightforward. Joining us today is Adrienne Williams. She's a researcher at the Distributed AI Research Institute, DARE for short. Adrienne started organizing in 2018 while working as a junior high teacher for a tech-owned charter school. She expanded her organizing in 2020 after her work as an Amazon delivery driver allowed her to see that many of the same issues she saw in charter schools were also at Amazon. Since then, she has worked both on the ground and behind the scenes with activists, politicians, researchers, and everyday people to enact positive change in the tech, labor, and education industries by educating the public on how these industries harm and how that harm can be reversed. This is going to be a ride. I hope you'll enjoy this episode. Adrienne, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you tell us about Tezcreel, what it is about, and how does it relate to the culture of exploitation of Silicon Valley?
Yeah, so this is something I've newly been reading up on. And, you know, I'm pretty new to this industry in general. I started with DARE, Distributed AI Research Institute, about 3 years ago, a little more than 3 years ago. And before that, I was just, you know, a worker. I was a junior high teacher. Then I was an Amazon driver. So like the ins and outs of the tech industry were something that I was very unaware of. And so coming into this, I'm always thinking like, oh, people know way more than me. This is probably just going to be over my head. I probably just don't understand. And as I'm reading about this Tezcreel thing, I'm thinking like, this can't really be what it is. There's no way it's this dumb. Like, there's no way. I keep thinking, you know, we had discussed before about everybody that has some kind of startup is seen as a genius. Meanwhile, this Tezcreel thing is basically like, one, people trying to pat themselves on the back for being altruistic, except for the people that they want to be altruistic towards are a million years in the future. And all of us can just eat dust for all they care because they want to prioritize people a million years in the future, but they're not even prioritizing people. They want to prioritize digital people. So that also doesn't make sense because then that's just you prioritizing like Xbox. That's what it feels like to me. And then the idea that, and I heard this recently, and this goes back to the whole Tezcreel thing, that one of the CEOs, and I'm gonna forget his name, at Google says that by 2030, so we're talking about less than 5 years, they will have colonize space, which is another part of what Tezcreel wants to, that whole movement wants to do, is they want to upload their brains, meld with machines, and then colonize space. And I'm thinking the audacity that somebody thinks, one, that they're going to, and they want to bring consciousness to all of space. In my head, I'm thinking like, well, we're conscious, so somebody beat you to that, bro. What are you talking about? And then to colonize space seems like a mighty presumptuous thing to think that you can do in less than 5 years. But when you think about like what we're going through now on Earth, we've got wars and famines and climate change and all these things. Yeah. And these people are like, well, actually, none of that matters. Mm-hmm. We don't care if you all get flooded off this earth, burnt off this earth, blown off this earth. We want to prioritize the digital communities a million years from now. It's just nuts. It sounds like a sci-fi movie, but this is what they're getting money from governments to do this kind of work. That's why I'm actually kind of excited that I understand this task real stuff more, because I'm like, I'm about to make y'all look stupid as hell because it's stupid. And the idea that we are giving all this money to people who are basically prioritizing a Digimon society. Remember those weird little keychain pets that people, I'm probably dating myself because I'm probably older than you, but back in the day you'd have this keychain and it'd be like this little digital thing, probably like 1 inch by 1 inch, and it was like a little pet and you had to feed it and you
Is
had
it
to
like a
keep it alive.
Tamagotchi?
Yeah, like a Tamagotchi. And we're prioritizing Tamagotchi societies a million years in the future over people today. That's nuts. I mean, that is nuts. And that's more religion than science. And they've got to be stopped. Why are we giving them money?
You used the word work, but is it work or is it building a new religion?
It's both. So it's very much a religion because there's no science backing it. They can't prove that they're going to be able to upload their brains. They can't prove that any of the stuff that they say they want to do is doable. It's very much a religion. And I can't even say I totally understand it because it sounds like such a sci-fi movie. It sounds like something you would see on Black Mirror. And it makes no sense. The work, though, comes in as they believe that in order to do it, they have to have so many, like, I might say this wrong, but like nano connections, like the way our brains are. We have so many connections in our brain that we can't even really fully map it. They want to have something that they can build that is the equivalent to our brain. They don't know how to do it. They don't have the technology to do it or the massive amounts of compute or whatever to do that. The work comes in as they're trying to build that, but they're not doing the work. That's the work that's coming in through data workers and data labelers and content moderators and people who are basically trying to train this technology to think like human beings. The problem is, it's a very limited population who's doing it. And the people who are quote unquote in charge don't really have a concept of like how to do that in a real safe way. So they're willing to sacrifice the lives, the livelihoods, the mental health, the stability of whole nations to try and get to this thing that they have no idea if it'll work or not. So the work is people are doing the work. Everything in AI is people. They want us to think that this magical thing where algorithms are building algorithms and there's really no work involved. They're just the dear leader creators who have this magical technology, but no one else has put any work into it. When that is just false, everything about AI from every point of view is people. They just hide them.
And speaking of data workers, we often hear, as you said, that AI systems are able to automate everything, that they're, as you said, almost magical and build themselves up, when in reality they rely on, first of all, expensive infrastructure and on the labor of people located more often than not in the global south. So, what kind of work do they do? And are they being compensated fairly? And do you think that this is a regeneration of neocolonialism through building technology?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they go to countries where they believe, and this goes back into the racism of it all, where they already have a belief system that nobody cares about those people. So, if nobody cares about those people, we can do whatever we want to them. If you think about like what I like to use as an example is like there is a huge case that could be made for human trafficking against Meta, where they want to focus on, the global north, right? Our Western countries, and say, we want to make sure that nothing on, online is harmful. That, we try our best to make sure that you don't get any hate speech or videos that are traumatizing and things like that. So what happens is they go to Kenya and they put out these advertisements that say, come work for Meta. And, you're going to come work for Meta. And so people think, oh, Meta, that's a good company. I'm going to make good money because that's what's advertised. And you have families who will save up money all together as a family to get one of the people, like a bus ticket, to get to this company that they say is Meta. They get there, they realize it's another company, it's a third party company. But what they're doing is they're sitting there 8 hours a day watching the most horrific videos, listening to the most horrific speech, and having to say what deserves to be put online and what should be pulled. Now you're talking about like every, all hate speech, child abuse, domestic violence, beheadings, war, crimes, genocide, the most horrific things you can think of. People are sitting there watching and having to make determinations within like 60 seconds. So that's every minute a new video for 8 hours. And then they realize, oh, I'm only getting paid like $1.20 an hour. So now, not only do I not have enough money to get myself some emotional support, a therapist, somebody that can help me through this, I don't have enough money to even get myself a bus ticket to get back home. So they're in essence stuck, and that's the definition of human trafficking. And so I am happy to hear that Kenya has kind of like has been stepping in. But it took a lot from those workers. It took people have killed themselves. People have serious disorders now, eating disorders, sleeping disorders. They're addicted to medication, just trying to get themselves back to normal because of this job that Meta said was just a tech job. It absolutely is not. And I may have forgotten the whole question. So if you need to ask me something again, go ahead and follow up.
No, I mean, it proved that it's another form of colonialism. It's just new colonialism all over again. I mean, what's the difference? Just like another form of colonizing and exploiting others.
And I find with the tech that the most insidious thing to me is how invisible it is. And so you have, with the Kenyan workers, it's very blatant, right? You know that they've been hired by Meta. You know they're going to this place. They're working for this organization. It's in your face. But in a lot of instances, people don't even realize they're working. They don't. I wrote an op-ed for Newsweek a couple months ago talking about the idea of zombie trainers, where you have refugees, prisoners and their families, school children, delivery drivers who are all training and building AI systems for companies, and they're not even aware that they're doing it. So it's really forced labor by way of fraud. And so many of us are contributing to it when we probably should be getting paid because it's still work.
100%. I think it's hard, and that's my personal opinion, but I think it's hard for many politicians and policymakers to understand or just to be equipped to deal with regulating AI, domestically and abroad, what you can or cannot do. I think it should not only apply to our own countries, like in the West, but also everywhere else. What are the red flags they should be looking out for, and do you think that politicians are equipped to deal with regulating AI without buying into all the hype that has been going around since the launch of ChatGPT?
No, I don't even think they care. I think that has to be our first step, is they have to care more about their constituents and the people that they claim to represent over the money that they can make through the kickbacks from these tech companies. That's the biggest problem, is we got to first make sure they care. Then we can start telling them about the red flags, because in the moment they don't care. And I'll give you an example, and I'm sure somebody's gonna be pissed at me for telling you this story, but I went to the Mississippi Policy Conference, held by the Congressional Black Caucus. And I was very excited to be there, thinking, great, we're going to focus on Black people. I'm going to be able to talk to you about AI and what these companies are doing. I spoke to two different politicians, and my focus at DARE is AI and labor exploitation and AI and education exploitation. I spoke to Congressman Bobby Scott, and I believe he's represents Virginia. And I spoke to Congressman James Clyburn, who represents South Carolina. And I tried to explain to them, I am a former junior high teacher who worked for a Zuckerberg charter school. I now work for this AI research institute, like trying to explain to them, like I have credentials, I know what I'm talking about. I was also invited here as an expert panelist to talk about AI. And I said, what's happening with the schools? This is very deliberate. They're trying to break down education. And both of them looked me in the face and said, that's not happening. So when you have that kind of attitude, when somebody comes as an expert and has the data and they won't even give them the time of day, we can't even talk about red flags, because they won't even listen to the idea that there might be something wrong with this new technology. Like they basically just both called me liars to my face. So
I
I
love
don't
this
know.
answer. I love, love, love this answer because it just shows like the power dynamic when you take a step back. Like, how do you make people care when the way it's established? Like, even the people who know the most, the experts, are not being listened to. So how do you make them care if they don't take you seriously and they only take tech bros and other white people seriously?
And the crazy part is when I went to this thing, this was about 6 months, 5 to 6 months before the election, and everybody was so confident that Kamala Harris was going to win. And I was really one of the minorities that's like, she's not going to win. Especially after I went to that, I was like, she's not going to win. And, I've been screaming into a void for the past 7 years about AI and education because they are actively trying to basically topple our public education system so that the corporations can own public education. Like, what does democracy look like if corporations are in charge of our children's education? Because I know for the school I used to work at, they had their own superintendent, and that superintendent answered to a CEO, not to the state, not to the county, not to any government, to a CEO. So a CEO could say, I don't give a shit what the parents have to say, what they think, they can go somewhere else. And I've been screaming about this for the past 7 years. I was trying to talk to these two congressmen about it in a serious way to be like, we need to get ahead of this. Then Trump wins. Then Project 2025 gets rolled out. And now I see these same people from the NAACP, different Congress people that I tried to speak with on our local news, our national news, CNN, MSNBC, clutching their pearls, talking about they're trying to dismantle education. Yeah, numbnuts. I've been trying to tell y'all this for how many years? It's the anger that I felt
Yeah.
when I started seeing them so upset. When I'm like, I sat in your face and tried to discuss this with you, and you called me a liar.
I need to sit with this for a second.
That's fine.
Because you said a Zuckerberg charter school, and I was like, what's a Zuckerberg charter? So I looked for it online. I had no idea this existed. Like, it's only in California, right?
So the Summit Public Schools, there's 11 of them up and down the West Coast. They're in Washington and they're in California. But this charter school model is something that when it started, it was basically a way for communities to say, our public schools aren't serving us. We are going to get together with parents and teachers and students and make a public school that actually serves our population. That has been co-opted by corporations. And really, the kids' education is secondary. Where I worked, Mark Zuckerberg had created this online learning platform, and they'll say it's personalized learning. When you hear that word, that phrase, personalized learning, just know it's bullshit. The only people that personalize learning are teachers. A program does not know your child, and they cannot personalize anything. My kids did the same projects, they did the same lessons. The only thing personalized was when they had to turn it in. So what you had was 12 and 13 year olds getting all their assignments through the whole year and not turning it in till like April or May, which put a huge strain on teachers who now are expected to grade all this stuff within like a month. There was nothing personalized about it. And really, it's not even about the kids' education. This school was falsifying data. They were falsifying grades. It was a shit show. My kids were not learning. I had eighth graders who couldn't read. And when I would talk to the English teacher and be like, hey, so and so, and she'd be like, I know. I know how to get kids on track. I know how to do interventions and help them read. I've been told I'm not allowed to. I've been told I have to put them on this platform, and that's the only way they can get an intervention. And it's really just a data grab. All their data is on there. And that's where it's going to meta engineers.
That is so, so scary.
And it's not just happening in the US. It's happening all over. The same companies that are doing it in the US are doing it in other countries too. I mean, just think of the repercussions of that if corporations, and I'm talking about like Oracle, Meta, Google, Amazon, like these are big corporations who don't give a shit about humanity. They are scooping up public education. What does that mean for a country when that's who's in charge? When Jeff Bezos is in charge of your kids' education? When Elon Musk is in charge of your kids' education?
My next question was about fascism, but I think we're already in the topic.
Yes, we are.
Considering that if they are, I mean, tech is just pretty much everywhere, but once, I mean, once it has, when it's in government, in schools, it just spreads their own ideologies. So my next question was, how do fascism and what we've been seeing in tech as ideologies relate to one another, and what has been the impact and risks associated with their rise?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I wouldn't say that tech is, well, some of them are just blatantly fascist, like Elon Musk, absolutely. But to me, what's so dangerous about so many of the other ones is they don't really have a belief system one way or the other. So when it was Democrats in control in the US, the tech companies, regardless of the product, were really walking this line of like, oh, well, we care about the community, we care about the climate, we care about blah, blah, blah. But the minute Trump got in office, they were like, kill anything that talks about Black people or immigrants or women. We don't give a shit about this. We don't want to be seen as woke. DEI sucks. They don't even know what DEI is. It's such a buzzword that means nothing. That's the scariest thing to me, because what they're saying there is, we don't care if it's a good government or a fascist government, we're here for it. And they are very much supporting the kind of breakdown and criminalization of being the other. And so it's just like this weird tech support for fascism.
You know, I just have another question because you grew up in California. You said Northern California, right? So you've been in this culture your whole life. To you, like when you think back when you were a kid, like the culture you were surrounded with, does it make sense how it evolved to the present day?
I mean, to me, it just feels like the next generation of the same old shit. So I grew up in Richmond, California, which is about 20 minutes away from Oakland. It's an inner city, but in the 80s and 90s. So it really was a lot of fallout from the Reagan administration and them pumping all of the drugs into all of the inner cities in California, which eventually spread to the whole country. And so it feels the same, right? It feels like, well, here's the communities that don't matter. Here's how we're going to raise money and make money on their backs. Here's how we're going to arrest them for basically illnesses of addiction, because you have people with illnesses of addiction for technology as well, which are causing a lot of the same issues, neglect, bad parenting, all these things, because you have kids that are in high school that are addicted to social media and their parents are addicted to social media too. And there is no help for that. And we don't have systems that have been funded in a loving way to say, like, we care about children, we care about families, we want our community to be strong. So we're going to fully fund our child protective services. We're going to fully fund our social services. They don't fund any of that. And so when you have situations, whether it be in the 80s when people were crack addicted and the communities were falling apart, or whether it be now when you just have people addicted to social media and they're not watching their kids, you can't even call anyone. As a teacher, you're a mandated reporter, which means if I see something happening to a child, or if I recognize that a child's not eating, or their family seems overly abusive, or something like this, I have an obligation to report that to social services, or I could go to jail. And you talk to teachers, and they'll be like, we reported on this child for a year and a half, and nobody has shown up to help them. We know they're not eating. We know their dad is beating them up. We know, like, it's the same old shit with better technology. That's really all it is. It's a lack of care for communities that need care, and for communities, like the crack epidemic in the 80s, for me, feels like it was an oil spill that was never cleaned up, right? So you have people that have tried their best. You have a lot of people that have broken out of that and done really amazing things that get no credit, but we're always judged because we still got a little bit of oil on our feet. And so it's the same old thing.
Yeah. And you made me think about, I've been thinking about this for a while now, that addiction to tech or social media really should be the DSM. That should be a mental disorder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's these arbitrary like numbers that I hear people throw out, and it just infuriates me because I feel like it fundamentally misunderstands the problem. People be like, oh, well, kids shouldn't be on social media till they're 16. Oh, well, maybe we should raise the age to 18. Our brains are not fully formed until 25, 26 years old. If we really cared about the well-being of our society, you would say nobody can be on social media until after age 26. I know you're technically an adult. However, this technology is rewiring people's brains. It's literally effing with human evolution. And because it's a fun game or it's a cool app, we forget the fact that it's changing the way we socialize, it's changing the way we date, it's changing the way we parent, it's changing the way we eat. I mean, it's changing everything about society. And we just, oh, well, it's cool. Not good enough.
And I just looked it up, and you know, like how, for instance, on Instagram, when you scroll, it's designed in a way that your brain is rewarded every few posts for with dopamine. It's the same when you gamble, and gambling is actually in the DSM. It is a disorder. So why is it in social media? You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, there's a lot. I personally feel like extreme wealth is an addiction as well. And that needs to be seen as a disorder. And people need to be capped at a certain amount of money because the problem with a wealth addiction is that we aspire to that, right? Like other addictions, whether it's gambling or drinking or drugs, you know, it manifests in like broken homes and violence and poverty and homelessness. Whereas for the user, extreme wealth manifests in private jets and pretty girls. And everybody's like, I want to do that too. But the thing is, the broken homes and the violence and the poverty and the homelessness still happens because of that extreme wealth. It just happens to us in greater society and not the addict. And so they absolutely should not ever be able to be a wealth addict and just go crazy because that's who's in charge right now. And that's why they act in ways that are so damaging because all addicts in the grips of their addiction act in damaging ways.
I had never heard this framework before. That's actually really interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, now will we ever get anybody to do anything about it? That's another question, but that's how I see it.
Actually, that's my next question, because a lot of harm has been done already. So what can we do? And when I say we the people, to reverse this harm?
I mean, we need what I will say is a little bit hopeful is I've talked to a lot of like engineering students and computer science students who are like, I love doing this. I don't want to harm my communities. So I think we need more people like that who know how to do it, who know what it's all about, what it takes, the ins and outs, and are like, I will not help a company make weapons for Israel. I will not help a company make, technology that makes climate change worse. So I feel like in that sense, that's a good step that a lot of these young people are so aware of climate change, so aware of like the way war works its way through our communities that they don't want to be that and they don't want to help with that. It's hard for me to be like, oh, everybody in the community needs to rise up because the problem is, and history shows that really most revolutions start with the poorest people. And trickle up. And I'm so damn tired of that. The people I talk to that I work with are exhausted. Low-wage workers are exhausted. Single moms are exhausted. Nurses, teachers, they're exhausted. And to say, oh, you got to go do more. Not only do you have to work full-time and then be a good parent and make sure you're like giving back, but now you also got to make sure you got all these meetings and these rallies and these protests. And like, it's too much. I feel like what's happening now in the US where everybody's out in these streets, I'm hoping what that does is light a fire under the ass of these politicians to say, you answer to us and not these tech bros. Because really, what needs to happen is those who have been hired to do the job of governing need to get off their ass and do their jobs. There's no other career set where you can be hired and make six figures and not do anything. And that's where our politicians are right now. They don't do shit. So that's where I feel like work needs to be done. We need to start hiring better politicians. We need to start crowdfunding and financially supporting better politicians because at the end of the day, regular folks don't have the energy to fix this on their own, no matter how much they protest.
Exactly. And I was talking about it with a friend recently, and we were like, you know, even the people who run for the left, like the Democratic Party, none of them, it's extremely rare to find someone who actually comes from the working class.
Yep. And those who are progressive, the Democrats push out. They claim that they're for like working people, but I think it's been shown time and time again that they are not. They are so closely aligned to me with Republicans. I feel like there's one party in the US, and that is like the money party. And they both work for that same party.
Adrian, how can we support your work?
Well, I mean, people can always donate to DARE if they want to. I would say, like, if there's ways, and I am not well versed enough in like politics in terms of financing to know if people can give money if they're not from the US. But like, if there are candidates who are like really on the level and they are not from the 1%, any money we can get to support them is necessary. Because right now, it's always David and Goliath. It's always like this working class person and then like, Google, Amazon, Meta, Tesla, all these people put in all their money for the candidate that's going to give technology what they want. And it's, you can't fight that. I can't run for office and afford, save money so I can have one commercial while they're running national commercials every 5 seconds. So like, really, I hate to say it boils down to money, but a lot of it boils down to money. I'm like, who are we supporting? And it has to be very strategic. And not everybody that needs to be supported is going to be on all your social media, on all the airwaves, because they can't afford it. So I think a little bit of like research on like who really needs help and who's really doing the work, I think is important. I mean, other than that, I think people need to like, they got to care. They got to care what companies they support. They got to care what information they put out there. Stop making it seem like AI is magic and it's going to solve everything. Do your own writing. The only way we're going to get rid of this is if we kind of reject some of this dumb technology that we don't need. We don't need ChatGPT. We have brains, and brains work really good. They work better than AI, but we have to remember that. Don't fall for this hype.
Adrian, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.